We all have stories. We all have stories of why we're here and where we've come from. I'd say many of us, and maybe most of us and all of us, were not born into this church. Maybe a few of us were. But we've all come from some other place, some other seeking and searching for that which gives our life meaning. And today I'd like to read a couple stories of people who have searched for faith and found faith in this church or in some aspect of this church. And also I'd like to hear from anybody out there who might want to share their story. So the first story is related to this church, but it's an old story. It is a story of a minister that we had here back in the early 20th century by the name of Curtis Reese. Curtis Williford Reese was born on the 3rd of September, 1887, on a farm in the Blue Ridge Mountains in Madison County, North Carolina. The Reeses were devout Southern Baptists, and many of them had been ministers. Curtis Reese once said, One of my paternal grandfathers was a Baptist preacher, one of my paternal grandfathers and two of my paternal uncles were Baptist preachers. My father is a Baptist deacon, two of my brothers are Baptist preacher, and a sister married a Baptist preacher. With so many clergymen in the family, it's understandable that when Reese earned his first dollar, he gave it to the Baptist church to help pay the minister's salary. It's also not surprising that Reese accepted Christ as his personal savior at the age of 9. He had been taught that if he reached the age of accountability without becoming a Christian and were to die, he would spend eternity in hell. Believing himself capable of making such an important decision, the 9-year-old boy stood before the congregation, confessed that he was a lost sinner, trusted Christ to save him. Although it was midwinter, he and other converts were baptized in the creek behind the church. Later, Reese thought that God had given him the call, and he decided to enter the ministry. He graduated from a Baptist college in Mars Hill, North Carolina, in May of 1908, and was ordained to the Baptist ministry. He went to Alabama, where his brother T.O. Reese was the minister of the First Baptist Church, and where he was able to supply a small rural church at Bellwood. He departed in September and entered the Southwest Baptist Theological Seminary in Louisville, Kentucky, and there supported himself by pastoring 2 half-time churches. But it was during his seminary studies that Reese began to have doubts about his religious faith. Since he believed the Bible was divinely inspired, it came as a shock to encounter what was called higher criticism at that time, a way of looking at the Bible from not a literal point of view, but from a more literary point of view. Even in a conservative Southern Baptist context, Reese's friend Ralph Bailey, who also later made the transition from Baptist ministry to Unitarian ministry, remarked that in 1908, he and I were students at the Baptist Seminary in Louisville, where I soon shocked him to his knees by my heresy. Much of this time was devoted, I think, to prayer, that he be corrected in my outspoken apostasy from Baptist truth. In Louisville, Reese first became in contact with Unitarianism, and he took some Baptist tracts over to the Unitarian Church and picked up some of the Unitarian materials. One pamphlet especially appealed to him, entitled Salvation by Character. It may have contributed to Reese's later decision to become Unitarian. After graduating from the seminary in 1910, Reese took a job as a state evangelist in the Illinois State Baptist Association, which was composed of 500 different churches that had split off from the Illinois Baptist State Convention. This position allowed him time for further study, and he enrolled in courses in several Baptist colleges around the state of Illinois. He settled in a small church in Tiflin, Ohio, later on, which he thought to be a more liberal church. I preached there twice each Sunday, but following the evening service, my conscience bothered me. I could and did say what I believed, but I did not feel free to say what I did not believe. Finding the Northern Baptist too conservative, Reese decided to transfer to a more liberal ministry, and he considered the Unitarians at this time, the Universalists and the Christians. Finally, he decided to more closely examine Unitarianism because of the work that he had read by Francis G. Peabody, a Unitarian who was a strong advocate of the social gospel at that time, which was expounded by the theologian Walter Rauschenbusch. Reese arranged a meeting with the minister of the Unitarian Church in Toledo, and after this meeting, Reese prepared a brief statement of his faith, and it said the following: I believe in a universal God, a universal brotherhood, mankind, a universal right, freedom, a universal motive, love, and a universal aim, progress. Reese was assured that his faith was consistent with Unitarianism, and when he decided to return to Tiflin, he decided to transfer from the Baptist Church to the Unitarian Church. After conferring with the secretary of the Western Unitarian Conference, Reese was recommended for the ministry of the Unitarian Church in Alton, Illinois, which accepted the recommendation and where he began his career in 1913. Reese did not lightly make this move from the Baptist faith to the Unitarian. It caused him great personal turmoil, as well as creating a rift with his family. His mother said very sincerely that she would rather have seen him dead. This is understandable, for had she learned of my death, she would have had the satisfaction knowing that I was flying around with angels in heaven. But now that she was sure that when I died, I would burn in hellfire and brimstone forever. Reese was close to one of his sisters and was proud when she named her son Curtis Williford after him. When he became Unitarian, his nephew was renamed Brunner Truett for a famous Baptist theologian of the time. Eventually, the family became reconciled to Reese's decision, and his sister even attended the Unitarian Fellowship for a while and might have become a member had her husband not been a Baptist deacon. Although Reese was in Alton for only 2 years, he had a number of significant experiences, and I think this is one of the significant things about this church, that Curtis Reese became a strong advocate of anti-vice, mobilizing the clergy in an active campaign to rid the city of Alton of gambling houses and brothels. He raised money to hire a private detective to gather substantial evidence about vice, and a result of the Crusaders backed a successful mayoral candidate on a cleanup ticket. So zealous was Reese in his efforts that the underworld had him shot at several times, and once it was necessary for him to hide in a parishioner's attic. Another time he was attacked at a railroad depot, but only slightly injured. The widespread newspaper coverage these episodes received provided fuel for the election campaign. On election night, while Reese and his wife escaped to a parishioner's home, a mob gathered in front of his home and lit several fires. This never happens in Alton, does it? Despite an increasing membership in Alton, Reese left in 1915 to become the minister of the Unitarian Church in Des Moines, Iowa. Later on, Curtis Reese became one of the signers of the very first humanist manifesto. So Curtis Reese went from devout Southern Baptist, and as he began to read and study, he became more enamored with the Unitarian Church, and then decided that his views were more suited to humanism and became a champion of the humanist cause. Another story I want to read comes from the student newspaper at Harvard University. It's called the Harvard Crimson. And this is a story that kind of appeared on the program Speaking of Faith about a month ago or so. And maybe some of you caught it. And so I'll read this real quick here. Memorial Church's crisp white spire provides a landmark for students and tourists alike, reminding us every day of God, whether we're believers or not. Yet the recesses of the church are home to another sort of faith, one that millions of Americans subscribe to. In a windowless basement office lined with books like Who's Who in Hell, Gregory H. Epstein is Harvard's humanist chaplain. He presides over his own sort of ministry, one that does not include the word God. As a humanist, I view God as maybe the world's most influential and important literary character, Epstein says. Humanism is a progressive philosophy of life which sees human beings as a process of evolution and sees them living in the one true world, the natural world. The greatest goal for a humanist is the pursuit of dignity and ethical excellence. Although Epstein articulates tenets of humanism with practiced aplomb, His path to this belief, not religion, please, was hardly linear. He was raised in the Reformed Jewish tradition, but studied Chinese and religion at the University of Michigan, intending to become a Buddhist or Taoist monk. Then he discovered humanistic Judaism, a movement which combines Jewish culture with humanistic principles. After his ordainment as a humanist rabbi, Epstein arrived at Harvard to study at the Divinity School. And he has assumed his role as humanist chaplain in the year 2005, when Thomas Farrick, the founder of the chaplaincy and its chaplain since 1974, retired. Today, Epstein is a mentor for Harvard students who question their faith or simply don't believe in God. As faculty advisor to the Harvard Secular Society, he advises and guides a burgeoning group of atheist, agnostic, and humanist undergrads losing their religion. The kids of the Harvard Secular Society are a close-knit, opinionated bunch. Its weekly discussion meetings are open to the community, but much of its regulars identify as atheists, with a handful of humanists and agnostics thrown in. Alex Harris, class of 2008, who is vice president of the Harvard Secular Society, estimates that the group consists of 60% atheist Jews, 40% Catholics, who've all changed their ways. Harris, who falls into the former category, emphasizes that the empirical truths, like the first law of thermodynamics, are the sources of his atheism. Belief is not a matter of choice. It's simply what one takes to be true, he says. Atheism allows you to choose your own values, either from reason or from experience, or from desire to maximize happiness, either for yourself or for some totality of individuals. The secretary of this group, Matthew Valente, who is also in the class of 2008, grew up in a Catholic household. Church was a weekly ritual, but in high school, as the story goes, he started challenging his beliefs. I started really buying into the scientific method, says Valente. Appropriately enough, a mechanical and material science major. I was agnostic for a while, and probably by the end of high school, I was an atheist or a humanist. He laughs about the semantics involved in defining his beliefs. You can keep throwing words in, he says, but on the whole, he avoids labeling himself as an atheist. I'd much rather call myself a humanist than atheist because there's a certain stigma to that word. A leap of non-faith. For Jose Rodriguez, a third-year Harvard Law student, his conclusion that God did not exist was even more of a leap. I was raised Catholic, he said, but to say that I was raised Catholic doesn't really capture my beliefs. I really did take on the spirituality, really wrestled with it, really promoted it. As an undergraduate at Brown, Rodriguez devoted himself to revitalizing the school's Catholic community. After graduation, he joined the Peace Corps, where he wrestled with his beliefs for the last time. I slowly realized that religion wasn't me, it wasn't doing it for me, he says. It wasn't an epiphany as much as opening my eyes a little in the moment to the process that I had just been in. The transition from faith was isolating at first. Leaving the church meant abandoning the way of relating that previously defined his existence. How many of us have left a way of religion that defined our existence? It's a lot more difficult to find and cultivate the friendships I was used to. Telling his family was hard, though they were supportive. I definitely felt like I was coming out. Rodriguez says he feels it was worth it. I definitely feel healthier, freer, more integrated as a person, he says. Though Sunday school will not be his vehicle to change the world, his service continues. This summer he will work at Florida Legal Services, working with low-wage workers in Miami. It's a job worthy of a missionary or an atheist. Parochial paradox. Back in the basement of Memorial Church, Epstein embodies such contradictions. His position is paradoxical. He is a chaplain without a church, a divinity student without a religion. His friend Rodriguez hesitates to define his beliefs, and the Harvard Secular Society students avoid abstract terms in their discussion of atheism, preferring phrases like empirical evidence and scientific method to explain their views. But faith is not a word that Epstein avoids. I think humanists are profound believers he says, because it takes faith, and it takes courage to decide that if there's no overarching meaning to life that's given to you by the universe, you have to decide that your life can be meaningful and that life in general can be meaningful. I think that's a brave choice, and I think that my job as humanist chaplain is to support people who are making that choice in whatever way they can. I thought that was a very heartwarming story on speaking of faith, and one that they haven't addressed very much, that humanists do have faith. People who have no belief in a higher power do have faith. We still can act ethically and treat each other with morals, even if they don't come from a higher power. So, moving on to the second part here, if there's anybody here today that wants to share their story. I don't want to put you on the spot. If nobody feels like they want to, that's fine. But we all have stories to tell. So if there's anybody here that would like to share a story, since there's not many of us here today and we have nothing else to talk about, so. Anybody at all? I feel like Oprah, you know. Donahue or something, so. Okay.
I can relate to what you've been talking about. I'm a member of the Methodist Church, and I was raised Methodist. And my friend Irene introduced me to this Unitarianism. I really appreciate it. It's very direct, and I like it very much. I don't know what I'll be able to do because I'm still committed to my church, which I go maybe to early service and then come here. And I really appreciate what you do. Thank you.
Thank you. I can relate to that too, since I was raised Methodist, so.
I think part of your family is in St. Church.
St. Paul's, and
yeah.
Yes, they are. They are. I think most of my family are embedded in the concrete of that church and will never be pried away, so, which is fine. Anybody else? There's one story that I shared with you last summer when I spoke last summer, and people probably get tired of hearing me say this, but I wanted to share it real quick that the first time that I walked in this church, I saw somebody that I knew, and he was very surprised to see me. And the one thing he said to me was, "John, you're not going to find any answers here, only questions." And I said, "That's exactly why I'm here." So I enjoy the questions. I don't want answers at all, so I'm not looking for answers. And I think a lot of us here are in the same boat, so. If that's all, I think we'll move on then. We've listened to some stories today, and we've shared some stories, and I'm sure as we do our potluck today, we can share more stories. And the wonderful thing about this church is that we always share with each other all the stories that we have over fellowship. And now we can go on continuing to create our own becoming, especially out there in the community of Alton. One of the things, I went to the district assembly this weekend, Friday, and it was pretty amazing because we had several ministers from the St. Louis area speaking. Kleber was one of those who spoke there, and I thought I was at a revival because he was speaking about the Church of Alton and was getting all animated and excited about what our purpose here is, not to become insulated and turned in upon ourselves, that the Church of Alton is best when we go out into the community and become the community and help the community. So there was a lot of amens and things like that said. It was pretty neat. And then the minister from Emerson Chapel in St. Louis got up and spoke about, you know, evangelization and in the Unitarian Church, which is two phrases you don't hear too often. But more and more, I think we need to evangelize and not be in people's face and tell them that, you know, there our religion is the only religion, but to be out there and say, this is what we stand for, and this is what we're doing. So that's, I think, the goal and the idea of this church. So we're going to have a little postlude here.